Hey everybody, my name is Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Can we someone turn up these lights a little more? I mean, you know what I noticed being a control freak? Where is she? There she is. Just like me. We have these nice little round lights. We could dim this down, turn off those big old white lights. What do you think? Do you want to make it kind of nice in here? And so they're like, welcome! What do you think? Could somebody work on those lights for us? That's just a control freak in me. Anyway, I just celebrated a birthday. I did. 20 years. You know, when that light hits you just right, I swear to God, you can't always count on that light, but it all looks good. 20 years, and I came in here once. One time. So what I would like to do is lose this jacket. So what I would like to do is to find out why it is that I am 1% of 1%. That's terrible, isn't it? 1% of 1% make it in one time, 20 years. So when you look at statistics like that, and being an aerospace engineer, I kind of look at that statistics stuff. I'm pretty good at math. I wondered why. And as I was flying out here, which actually took me 23. Left. So we started at 5 o'clock in the morning Thursday and got here 3 o'clock in the morning your time. Because we had a blizzard. It was all of 6 inches. So my wife, Valeria, said, well, why don't you call up Marshall? And I said, what am I going to tell him? We got 6 inches and the whole East Coast is closed? I'm not going to embarrass myself. It's all about how I look, and that would be embarrassing. So that ain't happening. And we came walking in here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and oh, my God, it was exhausting. But you know what? It was totally worth it. It's totally worth being here. I love being here. And I do have the pleasure of speaking around the world, and it's been a great honor. I've been doing this for, I guess, about a little over 10 years now, and I've been slowing down. I've been letting some other people come on the speaker circuit. And so this is my one out of two national gigs that I'm doing this year, and I'm excited to be here, not in NM New Mexico, into MN Minnesota. So just a quick story. I get booked out about a year in advance, and I get this email, and I'm like, yay, I'm going to New Mexico, this rocks, right? And then all of a sudden, come January, I'm looking for Alexandria, New Mexico, and I'm looking. And I called Marshall. I'm like, where are you? I mean, like, where? Well, you're flying to St. Paul. And I'm like, St. There's only one city. Minnesota? No! So I come here, and it's negative 36. And we're throwing water outside. And I'm like, these people are crazy. You know, my windshield wipers aren't working. I'm in a snowstorm. Oh, my God. But it was really cool. So what I'm going to do today is I'm just going to do a little house cleaning really quick, if I may. And the house cleaning that I'm going to do is tomorrow. So I've been flown out here to kind of do my little shtick up here and probably make you laugh and make you cry and do all that great stuff. But the big thing is tomorrow. And what I'm known for and why I fly around the world is to teach how Dr. Bob brought people through the 12 steps in 5 hours. And everyone's like, what? It works. 5 hours. And that's how he was able to bring 5,000 men and women through the steps. Okay? And so I've been doing this now for years. I sit in my office in Charlottesville, Virginia from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock on Saturdays, as my wife knows. And I wait for people to come in and ask me to take them through the steps. And I do. And when they leave, they're like, you are crazy. And this is nuts. And then why didn't anyone ever tell me about this? Because it's the best kept secret. Right? But let's not get angry at those who don't know because they don't know what they don't know. They just don't know what they don't know. And in my history of studying Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the best way, and I'm going to show you why. Okay? We have packages for you that I've came up with over the last 20 years. on the steps and how to take you through the steps. I have all the forms for you. I mean, this is a no-brainer. So when we're done, you'll have a highlighter, a pen, and a highlighted big book with the history in it. So you're looking at, everyone's looking. You got to see these 1,000 people here. This is on tape. So we have 1,000 people in a room. Shh, they don't know. So here they are. God, calm down. Calm, Minnesota. You know, look at us. What else could they do? It's like, get rowdy inside. So what we have here is from 9 o'clock to 10:15, I'm going to take you to the preface through the doctor's opinion. Okay? And then from 10:30 to 11:35, there is a solution to We the Agnostic, which takes you to step two. Okay? And then we're going to break for lunch. I'm probably going to steal a little time from lunch, if that's okay with you, just so that I can get you from how it works to working with others. And that takes you all the way to step 12. Sound good? Think I could do it? When was it? I was in Denmark. I took 1,000 Denmarkians through this book that way. And they were all like, you know, they're speaking in this language. Like, who the hell is that guy? He's some boy from Virginia. All right. So if you ever noticed, or if you ever heard my tapes, I always say, hi, my name is Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. You know, when I'm around, but if you want the meeting to be all about you, just say recovered. And the meeting becomes all about you. But let me tell you where I found that. If you ever want to hide something from an alcoholic, put it on the front page of his big book. Because when you put it on the front page of his big book, you're never going to find it. And it states here how many thousands of men and women have recovered. And they only use the word recovering one time in the stories, and it's in a context talking in a third person. That's it. They're always talking about the word recovered. They mention two times in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous about permanent sobriety. I mean, you really want to freak people out? Talk about permanent sobriety. And they talk about it here. And let me tell you what the difference is. And I'm going to go through this pretty quick because I'm going to get it into detail tomorrow. But my mother had cancer. And when my mother had cancer, she had breast cancer. And she had the disease of the cancer. And it was tearing her apart. But the difference between recovered and cured is that when she had the symptoms in the disease of cancer, after 5 years when it was gone, the symptom was gone, the cancer was gone, she's cured. Follow me? I'll put this up on the board tomorrow. But when you have alcoholism, the symptoms of my alcohol are gone. And I'll tell you my story how I achieved that and how I continue to achieve that. The big book loves to say, so long as, contingent on, right? They don't say you just recovered, so long as, contingent on. And it's so long as what I'm about ready to tell you. My symptoms are gone of alcoholism. But what happens when I put that one drink into my system? It's all off to the races. I mean, it's gone. And it's going to be really bad if that ever happens to me. Because for the people who relapse, and I just had the honor of talking to somebody who has a little less than 24 hours here, and we're going to be working together through this weekend, and I'm really excited about that. Because unlike other circuit speakers, I am one that loves working with the crowd. I love it. I don't like hanging in my hotel room and thinking I'm special. I mean, it's all about you guys. It's all about the steps. And what I told him is, you have not failed. You've never failed. You've never worked the program of recovery. And how do I know that? Well, listen to this story I'm about ready to tell you. In 1995, how many people here have flown on an airplane? Raise your hand. So about 600 have flown on an airplane. All right. Man, did you truck these people in from North Dakota? They're rowdy up there, too.
Buses are still coming.
North Dakota. North Dakota, raise your hand. North Dakota. Nice. UND? Did you go to UND?
NDSU.
All right. And I'll tell you why I know UND so well. They have a great flight program. So if you're afraid of flying, please, I'll wait for you to leave a little bit, because I'm a retired airline captain, and you may not want to hear a couple of these stories I'm about ready to tell. All right? One time I slipped up. I remember I slipped up and I said the name of the airline. I'm like, no. I ran over to the tape guy. I'm like, you got to erase it. I can't. I'm like, then give me all the tape. And I was going to rip it all up. Oh, my God. The stock would have went woo. It would have plummeted. Yeah, it was bad. Anyway, so a couple people in St. Paul, Minnesota, another airline that used to be based out of here called Northwest. Yeah, I'll rat them out. Stupid asses got caught flying drunk. Losers. So anyway, they get hauled off to jail, and one of the guys is in the big book. His story's in the big book. I was actually speaking at the Florida conference in Fort Lauderdale, and he was one of the speakers too, and I had to make amends to him. That's another story. So he was like, so you're him. I thought you'd be a lot taller. I was a prick. But anyway, so 1995 comes, alcohol testing comes into the airlines. And I fought that all of 1994 because I was a big part of the Airline Pilots Association. I'm like, it's my God-given right to be able to drink. How many people here believe that? Yeah, right. Okay, so all of you don't believe that, and I get it. But I did not get it. Because it used to be 8 hours from bottle to throttle. That was the legal limit. I kind of fudged it a little bit, and I say 8 feet from bottle to plane. I didn't find anything wrong with that. And so what you do is you bid your schedule in December for January. Follow me? And I'm trying to figure out, now that they're going to give us breathalyzers, what? And it was 0.0124. Are you kidding me? I had hangovers 2 days old where I would have blown a 2.0. So I'm trying to figure out the schedule, and I got it. You think there'd be a problem, right? It took me 3 weeks to figure out how I'm going to drink while flying. Yeah, I know. So it gave me a headache, too. So there I am. I figure it out. January comes. I have to fly to Washington because I was based out of Washington, living in Florida. Yeah, try that weather, folks, in the wintertime. Why don't we go down there next time and do a little get-together and an old roundup in Fort Lauderdale. So I'm commuting up to Washington, and I thought I'd have a little drink, have a little cocktail. I want to tell you one thing. I've never, ever had one cocktail in my life, not one, ever. And let me tell you, and this is mostly for the newcomer who's out there, and I won't break his anonymity. The way that you process alcohol is different than the way my wife, Miss Al-Anon Black Belt, give a shout out. Give a shout out who's talking tomorrow. Valeria, woo! And it's not Valeria M, and you all are gonna catch hell for that one. But anyway. So as it comes in to us, it comes in as alcohol to my wife. It turns to a formaldehyde type substance. It then goes to a barley and hops, which is its base. Then it goes to H2O, and she goes to the bathroom. Follow me? Yeah. Got it? Not for us. We've been blessed with another step. How many people have told you, you've crossed the line? No kidding. What happens now is it comes in as alcohol, turns it from formaldehyde. Right? Now the formaldehyde with my wife gives her this aloofness, this woo, Douglas, I'm getting drunk, sir. That's off a half a glass. I'm like, what? Really? And then her body shuts down and says, stop. And she leaves that half a glass here. And I'm like, what up? Not with us. What happens is when it comes to this alcohol, turns to formaldehyde, we get that little Oh, my God, if everybody just left me alone, I swear to God I would take over the world. Just get off my back, all right? Get off my back. Get off my back. And what happens is we actually form a codeine-like substance in our mind, which makes it virtually impossible for us to stop once we start drinking. And as the big book says, we are restless, irritable, and discontent, and we can get the comfort and ease at once from one drink. Got it? So that's what happens to me. So, let's go back to January 1995. I take that one drink. This happens. I wake up February 1st. February 1st, 1995, I wake up. It's 3:25 in the afternoon. I still, to this day, don't remember 1995, January. And it still kind of frightens me, right? But I knew there was a purpose on this earth, and I know what it is. And it's to help people through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous to find an experience with God that will remove the obsession of alcoholism. That's my purpose. I'm going to put a period at the end of that. Because when I got sober, I found out I didn't like flying. Not a good thing to have your captain not like flying. Would we all agree on that? Yeah. The guy in the back's like, holy shit, are you kidding me? So I wake up February 1st, it's 3:25 in the afternoon. And why do I look at the time? Because I wanted to tell God what time I was going to die. And I'm looking at this clock, and I started going in convulsions. It was really bad. There was puke, there was vomit, there was feces, there was bottles, there was blood. It was everywhere. And there was a note at the side of the bed. And it said, I took the kids. You turned out just like your father, who drank himself to death at my age right now, which I just had a birthday and I'm 54. And he's dead, right? And that rang my bell like nothing has ever rung my bell. And I screamed at the top of my lungs. And all of a sudden, this peace came over me like I have never felt in my life. And I just raised up. And I don't mean I levitated. I sat up in bed. I'm not that powerful yet. I sat up in bed, and this peace came over me, and the words came into my mind, it's over. And it said it three times, it's over, it's over. And a telephone number came into my head. I swear to God, this is a true story. And I call up, and it said, Captain So-and-so with So-and-so Airline Employee Assistance Program. I'm like, and I hung up. I didn't even know we had an Employee Assistance Program. And I called again. I called the third time. Finally, the fourth time, Captain Appleby said to me, stop. This is a secure line. I'm like, I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm missing January, you think? You might be an alcoholic if you're missing January. So I said to myself, he goes, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to come right down. And they weren't lying, man. They were like CIA. Woof. And I was in this office. I had started my first company. And it was a telephone company. And I was in my office. And, of course, I had to be dressed up in a suit and tie. I don't know what that was all about. And I'm sitting there, and these guys come in. And Captain Appleby was there. And he says, listen, you may never fly an airplane again, but we need to go surrender your license to the chief pilot. And you have to understand, this is who I've ever been. That's it. I was Doug the pilot. Everybody introduced me as Doug the pilot. I thought I was Doug the pilot. It was the only thing I knew. I was Doug the pilot. Everybody thought it was cool. It was who I was. And I said, get out of my office. And I remember just looking out the window. It was in February. It was freezing. I think it was like 68. And it was... What? And the rain's coming down. Rain, not sleet, not snow. And I started crying. I said, I'm going to die like my father. And Captain Appleby turned around and he says, you know, you don't have to live life like this anymore. You mean I don't have to abuse my wife and I don't have to abuse my children? No more? I don't get it. What's the trick? He says, just one day at a time. And here we go with the slogans, right? Here we go with the slogans. And I said, let's do it. I was ready. And I got in the airplane. And they, three guys, like, put me up. I went in. I surrendered my pilot license. And I went down to Happy Hills. And Happy Hills for airline pilots is South Beach. Welcome to South Beach. Now it's really cold. It's 78. So I was so bad, they kept me in the hospital for 28 days. The hospital for 28 days. But when I walked into that place, there was this little guy, Dr. Wolfson. He was shorter than me, right? And he had his feet up on the table. And there was my then flight attendant. I married a flight attendant. Imagine that. And she's a dear friend of mine. Dear, 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 dear friend of mine. I have two beautiful kids, and I'll tell you all about that. They were 2 and 3 when I got sober. Ugh. They're 24 and 23. Love him to death. So she was sitting there. She's like, you know, whoa, what's going on? First thing, you're alive? You know, like you haven't checked on me in a month. I was hungry. Who's cooking for me, right? It's all about me. And this guy looked at me and he goes, you're an angry little man. Oh. So picture my friend here with his feet up on the table. I walked right up to his and I said, F you! And I just, come on, we're leaving. And I grabbed my wife's hand and I'm walking out the door. And he didn't even flinch. And he says, if you touch that doorknob, I'll make sure you'll never even fly a freaking kite. Shit. Woo. That's not good. Because why? Who I was. So I make it out of his office. And they're sending me down to my room. And for 28 days, they made me wear this gown where my little cheeks were hanging out. Right? Because they weren't breaking me. And I'm walking around, and so I've been there about an hour. One guy almost throws me out. This big guy comes walking into my room. He goes, get to your knees. And I'm like, whoa, dude, I'm not like that. I don't know what you all do in this hospital, but he goes, you really are a genius, aren't you? He says, get to your knees. We're going to pray. I said, no. No, we're not going to do that because I don't believe in God, and I was atheist. I wasn't agnostic, straight up mathematical atheist. So he says, so genius, how's that been working for you? I said, well, until I met you, I think it was pretty good. You know, a little bit of a wise ass in me, so I'm just going. He goes, okay, that's cool. Just pack up your bags. I'm like, oh, that's it. I'm cool. All I had to do is say I'm atheist and I'm out, like the doors of heaven just opened up. And he brings me to the elevator. He goes, get out. And I'm like, whoa. If I don't graduate, and I said that, if I don't graduate this program, I won't be able to fly again. He says, get to your knees. And in the hallway, I got to my knees. And I said, he says, pray. I said, okay. I said, God, you little son of bleep, 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 bleep. And when I was done, he goes, all right, not bad. Not bad. And I went to my room. And I can honestly say that I have not missed a night. I have not missed a night in 20 years. Or a day. 20 years. Getting to my knees. And I still didn't get this God thing. I didn't get it. But there was, I just didn't want to drink anymore. The pain was so great. One thing about human beings, as we just heard from the Al-Anon side, one thing about humans, when we get in enough pain, we're gonna move. You're gonna move somehow, some way. The gentleman I was talking to tonight, you know, he's in out. And I promised him sooner or later, you know, you will move. And when his movement comes to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when it comes to the steps, we here as a collective are going to change his life. And how are we going to do that? So what happens is I was in a 28-day program, and they loved me there. They kept me in for 72. That's so funny about that. So anyway, so they kept me in for 72 days. And then by the time they wanted me to leave, I'm like, you can't make me leave. I'm holding on like this. They're pulling my... Get out! And I go to Amelia Island, Florida, where my wife and kids were. And I went to a meeting, and I went to another meeting, and another meeting, and another meeting. I was going to 4 meetings a day. So my family didn't exist. I just took one addiction and turned it to another. I would never advise anyone to do that, but I did. And after 90 days, in Florida, they give you these little trinkets, door prizes, trophies that you get if you don't drink. I don't get that, but whatever. And so I was waiting for my 90-day chip, and I was going to go to Five Point Liquors. I was graduated, right? 90 days, done! Because who wanted to work 11 days a month, make all this money, and fly airplanes? I didn't. I wanted a drink. And if I had one drink, I would never fly a kite. Ever. I'd never get my license back. And I was okay with that. Think about the depth of our alcoholism. Just think about that. Just think about that, right? There were things that happened when my wife was on a trip and I was in the house that still bother me today in my drunkenness. Like taking the lock, turning it around, locking the kids in their room so I wouldn't harm them. All right? Cooking all the food because I knew if I cooked it, I would have left the stove open drunk. Right? Letting them pee and poop themselves 24, 48 hours. You know? I mean, that still haunts me today. So the pain that on the other side, the alcoholic goes through, we don't forget that. We're not going to forget this ever, right? 20 years, it's just not going to happen. But it gets better each time you tell the story. And I couldn't agree with you 100 more than that. So there I was, and I'm going out of the meeting. And as I'm leaving the meeting, this guy stands in front of me. From Hoboken, New Jersey. How do I find a Hoboken Big Book Thumper from New Jersey on an island 5x10 in Florida? Anyway, I found one. His name was Greg H. Still my sponsor to this day. Greg comes up to me and goes, hey, genius. So, this genius thing started getting spread around because I got an aerospace engineering degree. And everyone's calling me genius. He goes, listen, genius, you're acting way more weird than usual. He says, so if you're about ready to go out, I want to make sure that we have one thing very clear, that AA has not failed you. You have never worked the program of recovery. And I'm looking at this SOB and I'm like, what? You've been dragging my ass all to these hospitals, to these jails, to these institutions. I've been going to 4 meetings a day. I hate this place. I hate my life. I want a drink. He goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're the mayor of the fellowship. I get that. And by the way, stop cheering meetings. You're embarrassing me. And you're embarrassing yourself. The program of recovery, and he took this big book and poof, slammed it into my chest. He says, this is the program. So this is what we're going to do. He says, you don't have a job. And he said it condescending like that. And that really hurt. That hurt my feelings. He says, but what we're going to do is you're going to come over to my house at 8 o'clock. 8:01, don't show up. You'll be here on Tuesdays and Thursdays. If you lie to me once, it's over. Got it? And he goes, moved out of my way. And he says, have a good day. And it's Saturday. And now I'm hyperventilating. I couldn't get to my car fast enough. I'm like tripping all over the place. And I get in my car, and I'm at the light. And I'm looking at Five Point Liquors. And let me tell you something about Florida that I absolutely adored. It's that they have drive-through liquor stores. So when you're too hammered to walk, you drive through. So the whole left side of my car is destroyed because I'm trying to get to... You know, I got my captain hat on sideways. I'm like, Martha! Hey, Cap, what are you doing? Give me my half a gallon, right? I'm home for a day. Give me my half gallon. So I'm at the light. I see Five Point Liquors, and my car makes a left. I didn't go. I didn't go. And I sat home and I white knuckled it. And I white knuckled it until Tuesday. And I showed up on his doorstep. And the first thing he did was he opened up to the front page of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he showed me a circle and a triangle. As you can see up here right now, there's a circle and a triangle up there. They used to be in the big book, but they took it out after halfway through the third edition. And I'll tell you the history of that also. I used to think it was just nice earrings that you girls used to wear, or a necklace that we all used to wear, but it actually means something. And it's not like Bill was a genius. What Bill was is he took something and he just mimicked it. And this actually, if everybody heard it, comes from mind, body, and soul. If your mind, body, and soul are equal, you'll be protected by the God of the universe or your understanding. So this is what Bill thought. The bottom is recovery, the left side's unity, and the right side's service. We'll get into this in detail tomorrow. But what he says is the recovery is the 12 steps, the unity is the meetings, and AA is service work. The service is AA. How are you helping AA flourish? Okay? So, I work the 12 steps daily in my life, and I'll show you how I do that tomorrow through a written 10 step. You guys are like, Dude, you got to get a life if you're writing your TED step. I have a phenomenal life, thank you very much. Because I'm going to show you in the big book that says, contingent, so long as, because once I stop, all bets are off, okay? So that's the 12 steps. I go to a minimum of 2 meetings a week. That's me. That works for me, okay? And I'm going to explain something else that might upset some people tonight. And then on AA service work, I have a home group. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I'm the intergroup rep. My chances of drinking are less than average because I'm protected by God in the circle. Does that make sense to everybody? So let's just dispel something right now tonight. What I want to dispel with you is meeting makers make it. I want everyone here to understand that I do not go to meetings to stay sober. I go to meetings to find sponsees. I go to meetings to help others. I go to meetings so I can go out for coffee and fellowship. I love that. I would go to more if I could. But I'll tell you what my life has turned out today. And you're going to be like, damn, Skippy. You know, what do you sleep, 4 hours? And that's about what we do. So I was talking to this young man. And I said, you know, when did you come into the rooms? And he says, about 2001. I said, did you work the steps of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And there was a big no. Did you sponsor people out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? The answer was no. Did you go to meetings? And the answer was yes. I said, okay, how'd that work out? So 2002, when he comes back in, I asked him the same questions. No, no, yes on meetings. So how did that work out? So 2015, ouch. He's back in here. No, no, yes on meetings. So what I did is I took all these yeses under meetings, I circled it, I said, but I thought meeting makers make it. And I do this 100% of the time with my sponsors that are chronic relapsers, and this is what I find out. This is what I find out. So let's just look at the difference between him and me. I came in 1995. How did that work out? 2015, I'm still sober. What happened? I worked the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continue to do that to this day. I sponsor people right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still do that to this day. Do I go to meetings? Yes. I have 3 yeses to his 1. Does that make sense? And we're going to get into that into detail tomorrow. Do you think I'm selling tomorrow too much? Just tell me if I'm getting too pushy tomorrow. Guy in the front here is like, yeah, man. He's like, cut on that, would you please? Why is Alcoholics Anonymous so important to me? I found out that I didn't like flying once I got sober, right? I found out that I was... That's fairly good in business. I started a company, got big, sold to AT&T, got this check. I was like, whoa, this is cool. Moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, bought the train station, started a restaurant, franchised it. That got massive, sold it. I was like, whoa, that was cool. Started another company, made it really big, sold to Goldman Sachs. I was like, now I retired. And that was it. And my wife and I, Bella, Valeria, are you going to see tomorrow? A little plug for you, honey. Wanted to move out to Italy, went out there for about 2 weeks. I had ADD with this retirement. I thought it was like, what, 2 years? I'm like, okay, enough of the retirement. I think I was 42 or 44. And we moved back to the States, and we've been here ever since. And it's just, my life has become so full and so beautiful because of Alcoholics Anonymous that I have to give back. So I was speaking at this conference in South Carolina, and it was called the Old Timers Conference. It's amazing that I'm now an old timer. And the Old Timer Conference, we were finding what's happening to the old timers. They're all fading away. Are they going out and drinking? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they found God or another type of spirituality, or they've moved on, which is fine. But I find that to be so selfish. Because what about the guy that I met tonight? I mean, how cool. I still get excited about sitting one-on-one with another man and going over the big book and giving him my experience, right? And showing him that he has never failed. He just never worked the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hallelujah. Is that great news? I'm so excited. I really am. If you go to the forward to the first edition, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered. It says, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I just showed you the mind and body part. Once the mind obsession comes in, as so many of the times it does, and it will happen to him again if he doesn't get into these steps. How many people, I'm falling off a bar, I just pooped myself in this bar, I'm walking around, I'm stinky, and the next day I wake up, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not drinking anymore. And if you hook me up to a lie detector test, it's going to go, are you going to drink? No. Right? I mean, I'm good. At 12 o'clock, I'm like, well, maybe never. That's kind of a long time. It really wasn't a poop. It was just kind of a little water. And, you know, and I don't think really anyone saw me. And then 4 o'clock, I'm like, oh, man, there's happy hour at O'Toole's, and I can't turn on my friends. And before you know, I'm at the bar like, woo! Dude, last night, man, you were wasted. No kidding, I was wasted. All right? It says, to show other alcoholics, and it uses the word in its squiggly lines. For you educated people, it's called italics. I call it squiggly lines. It says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. If we, I love alcoholics. You gotta love them. We have a book here that says we're going to show you precisely how we have recovered. And the alcoholic is here like, I got it. We're good. No, I don't need this. I'll do one step a week, one step a month. And I'm like, oh, you know, my knees, where do they come up with this? Right? Where do they come up with this stuff? It's not one step a week. It talks about next, then, immediately, launch. These are the words that are used after each step. I'm going to show you these tomorrow. They're going to come out and they're going to bite you in the ass. You're going to be like, whoa, I didn't know it. So where did that come from? Whoa, where did that come from, right? Precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And we must show other alcoholics how we did that. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy. Now, we're in the doctor's opinion, and I'm brushing through, because tomorrow, did I tell you at 9 o'clock? What are you doing? Okay, good. So I'll make sure Marshall understands it. That we have an allergy. The allergy we have is that we are blessed. I used to hate when people would say to me, I'm a blessed recovered alcoholic because you're a loser. And you didn't have as much fun as I did peeing myself in bars, right? Loser. I get it. It took about 5 years, but I get it. I get the blessing. We're faster. We're better employees. I believe we're all better looking than the non. No offense, honey. I love you. She's shaking her head. Right? We're better. I'm not lying. I'm blessed to be. Sometimes when I give it up that I'm a recovered alcoholic to some people, and I'm in academia now at the University of Virginia, and I'm so blessed to be there at such a prestigious school and to be a professor. And that interview was a little tough, right? They pull your driving record back from like when I was 10 and try to explain out 4 DWIs. Well, yeah, so as I tell my wife, I figured out what happened with those DWIs. I got the problem, I quit driving. It moved to Hoboken. Right? You didn't need a car. You got a cab. You got the city. I quit driving. Years I quit driving. That was the problem, not the drinking. Okay, sure. That sounds good. It talks about here that though we work out our solution, we, the first 100 people, though we work out our solution on a spiritual as well as an altruistic plane. Okay? My wife and I, before she started waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, we'd pray and meditate together, which is awesome. Now, she gets up really early because we have a company in Calcutta, India. And she talks to them, and she does her prayer and meditation downstairs. Now I do my prayer and meditation. But if you really want to get a bond with your loved one, with your significant other, try praying and meditating together. That is cool. That is really cool. So I did my first step when I was in Happy Hills in a padded cell. It was clear to me that alcohol destroyed every weave of my life. Got it. Check. Then I got this big book thumper who's bringing me through the book, and he gets me up to the second step, and we start talking about this God thing. And as we start talking about this God thing, he says, will you come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity? I said, no. No? He goes, then you're hosed. I'm like, whoa. Well, there's got to be a door number two. There's always a door number two. He says, no, get God or die. He says, but having said that, having had a spiritual awakening as the singular result of these steps, he goes, you're not a step 12, you're a step two. So I'll tell you what we'll do. Will you come to believe that you've been sober for 92, he said, let's not call it sober. He says, would you come to believe that you've been a dry drunk for 92 days by the help of Alcoholics Anonymous in the meetings? I said, I could do that. Good, let's move forward. And he kept pushing me through this book because he knew what was going to happen. Follow me so far? So then we got to step three. When we got to step three, he got to his knees because he wanted to do the third step prayer just like they used to do it in Ohio. And we had to do everything by the big book. And he's getting to his knees, and my kids are there, and I'm like, oh my God, I got so embarrassed. I turned red. I never turn red, and I don't get embarrassed, right? I could poop myself. I could pee myself in a bar. But you get to your knees, we're over here. We're way over here, okay? He got to his knees and says, join me. I said, no, I'm not joining you. So he said, all right. So what he did is he said the third step prayer. And he says, can you make a decision right now to turn your will and your life over to care of God? I said, no. He says, then you're host. I'm like, here we go again with the host. And he says, will you make a decision right now to finish the rest of the steps with me? I said, absolutely. Pushing me forward, right? And it says here, voicing it without reservation. After he said the third step, voicing it without reservation, this was only a beginning. If honestly and humbly made, and that's where they used to make you go on your knees. Because how much more humble are you going to be than on your knees? And I get everybody on their knees when they're in my office and we say the prayer. But we don't say amen after it, like the seventh step. And there's a reason behind that. And if you come to the 9 o'clock meeting tomorrow, I'll tell you that reason. And don't be late. No, I'm kidding. Okay? Then we moved on to the fourth step. Well, here we go. So he says, okay, he showed me how to do the fourth step. He had a form, which I still use to this day, and it was right out of the big book. I had 26 pages of resentment, of fear, of sex, of harms done. 26. But you know what I left out? I left out the thing. And we all have a thing. We all have a thing. And so when you come into my office, you don't write a four-step. I'm like a sales call. I got you now. You're saying yes. You're not leaving. I pull out the four-step form. I get them all excited about the resentment. I'm like, are you ready? Let's do the resentment. And they're like, yeah, we're ready. Okay. I look at them straight in the eye and I said, what did you come here not to tell me? That's what I want to know. And they're like, and then all of a sudden the lip starts quivering. The tears start coming down. And I'm like, I got him. Boy, I never told anybody, but and then they just like vomit, right, on my desk. And they're like, that's when it's time for a dip or a smoke break. Right? Because I got him. Because the rest of what they're about ready to say, I could care less. The hardest thing for me in a fifth step is staying awake. I want the thing. And once I get that thing, we're good. But I don't let them know that. We move on and I listen. Thank God they don't quiz me. You know, I think one time, so I have them sit behind me and I lay on the couch and I'm like, You're a couple thousand of these. You're like, oh, okay. So there I was sitting in front of my sponsor, and he went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous over here, and he says here, do you know why you're doing the four step? And I said, yeah, because you made me do it. He says, no, genius. He says, the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. He says, time after time, newcomers have tried to hold to themselves certain facts about their lives. He looked right into my soul, and he says, are you holding any facts back? And I'm like, now remember, if I lie to him once, I'm out of there. And I looked at him straight in the eyes like, no, I'm not holding anything back. Lied right to him, right to his face. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I will show you 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Vanna White, right? It says it 7 times. Are you sure you're telling me everything? So finally, when he gets to the last time he says, I'm going to say this once, genius, and that's it. If you want to hold it back, it's all yours. He says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing. Are you withholding? And before he said, are you withholding anything? It was 1984, Knoxville, Tennessee. And I vomited on his table. And I look up and I'm like, like, I can't believe I just told this dude what I did. And he looked back and he goes, that ain't nothing. Let me tell you what I did. And then he told me his thing. I'm like, dude, that's sick. I would advise anyone here doing a fourth or fifth step, don't say that to your sponsor. So what I did is I returned home. It says, returning home, we'd be quiet for an hour. I got ADD. I swear to God it was 15 minutes, but it seemed like 15 hours. It was killing me. But I took the book down from the shelf, and I did exactly what he said to do. Exactly. Okay? And then the funny part is, after you do that and you return back home, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then. Then? How fast is then? Well, it's like then, next, step 6. I go right into step 6. Okay? And then after my creator, it says, when ready, we say something like this. Then I get the person down to their knees again, and we say the 7-step prayer. And at the end of the 7-step prayer, it says, amen. Why does it say amen? They're smart. Come to the 9 o'clock showing, and I'll tell you tomorrow. All right? But there's a specific reason. And I'm like stuttering because we got like ice cream out there. I smell it. So I'm trying to get through this real quick. So anyway, so now here we are right now. All right? So now we're at step 8, right? It says here, the next word after amen is now. Okay? Now. How fast is now? Now. We go out and repair the damage done in the past. All right? Now. Meaning, like, should we wait a week? No. Like, now. All right? Now is really, like, now. So it talks about the ninth step. I know you're not going to believe this, but I was a liar and a thief. There were a few 10 bench warrants out for my arrest in the state of New Jersey. That was my last amends. Being an airline pilot really sucked because I could literally make direct amends anywhere. And he had me on a plane once a week, literally making amends everywhere. I hated it. It was terrible, but I did it. I did it. And I went into the homes that I stole from. I went into the businesses that I stole from. I went into the women that I abused. And it was just an ugly, ugly, ugly 2 months of my life. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. And the final one was I had to go to the state of New Jersey. And I flew up to the state of New Jersey to go make amends to the state of New Jersey. And I got all my pilot licenses back at that time. I upgraded to captain on another airplane. I was based out of Washington. I was all excited. And I call up the airline. I said, I'm going to go do some jail time. They're like, huh? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, are you kidding me? And I said, no, I'm going to go do some jail time. They said, did you talk to the union about this? I'm like, yeah. You think I'm going to call management first? Right? Hey, I'm going to jail. I'm a loser. And they're like, man, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen. So I went up and I talked to my family about it, and God bless them. They said they would cover the child support and the alimony because the flight attendant didn't want me anymore, which is fine, and I can understand that. I wasn't the person she married. I was a spiritual being, and I was on a different quest than she was, and we lovingly broke it off, and she's just, I'll give you a quick example. There's this pilot friend of mine who just called me up. He goes, I just flew with your wife. Oh, my God. I swear to God, I thought she was talking about her husband. She was talking about you, dude. Like, she's the best, you know? She comes to all my new restaurant openings with my kids, and we're just really close, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I walk into jail. Now, I had a little hanger, like I was going to the Ritz. And this big guy behind, like, a podium like this is, whoa! And I'm like, my name's Doug Muir. They're like, oh, Mr. Muir, hey, we've been looking for you. And he put handcuffs on me and brought me in the back. I'm like, yeah. And I'm sitting in this chair, and this young guy, well, young, he looked old then, young now, was about, I guess, 38, and he was the attorney for the state. And he walks in, he opens up this folder, he goes, do you understand how much paperwork you just gave me? I'm like, do you think I care? I'm in handcuffs. And he goes, why are you doing this? And in the big book, it talks about. But it says, before taking drastic actions, we might implicate others. We must secure their consent. If we obtain their permission, consult with others and ask God for help. And the answer said, I have to surrender myself to you because I have to make this restitution. I've done this, this, this. He goes, you don't have to tell me. I got it right here. He says, so you're an Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, yes, sir, I am. I said, I'm a proud member. He said, I'm going to do this without crying. For the first time in all these years, I'm going to try to do it without crying because we have to go get ice cream. And then he says, I'll be right back. And I said, I'll wait here. I'll wait here. So I waited there, cuffed. And he takes a piece of paper and he slides it across the table. And he says, do me a favor, sign this. I said, okay, can I read it? He says, are you trying to negotiate with me? You're in cuffs. I was like, well, the big book states that we tried to make the best deal we can. And I was realistic. And I said, I could pay this much money. It came up to $172,000 in restitution. And I said, this is my contract. And this is what I'll do when I fly each airplane after I get out of jail. And this is what I'll make. And you are not the only person I screwed over. I said, I have 15 envelopes that I put $5 in each week. And when that one goes, I put $10 in the next. When that one goes, I put $15 in the next. And that's how I paid off my restitution June 2nd within 2 years. And that's the way I did it. And I took this guy, I took this serious. I took this serious. And he says, this is the damnedest thing I've ever done. He says, but I'll tell you what, why don't you get out of here? I'm like, get out of here, like to the next cell over? To the next holding bin? He says, no, you're good. You can go. And I walked outside, and of course I didn't have a cell phone. And I turned around and walked back in. The guy goes, what do you want? And I'm like, can I call up my mommy? I called my mother. I'm like, I'm out. She goes, you're out where? I'm like, I'm out. I'm standing. I'm out. Get here. Pick me up. And she picks me up. She goes, where do you want to go? And I said to her, I'm free. I'm free. Do you understand that? I'm free. All restitution's being paid. All everything. I am free. And that's the first time I ever had that in my life. And she dropped me off at the Newark airport. I'm flying back down. I was flying on United Airlines, so you know they don't fly for United. But as airline pilots, we get to ride in each other's flight deck. It's called a jump seat. And then when the door closes, we throw each other in first class because that's just what we could do. I didn't fly coach until I started paying for tickets when I retired from flying. But I'm sitting in first class. I'm sitting next to this lady, and this overwhelming God consciousness, like the day that I woke up, hit me, and I started crying, and I couldn't turn it off. And the flight deck comes over. She goes, "Are you okay?" And the other lady's like petting my head. I'm like, "I want God. I want God. And I'm just crying. And so the flight attendant's going to the captain. He wants God. The captain's like, give it to him. And, you know, everybody's like, most embarrassing moment of my life, 20 years of sobriety. That was my most embarrassing moment. I got off that airplane, and I felt like I was floating, right? And I didn't read a non-spiritual book for 5 years. 5 years, I just, and I found my God. I found my God. My God rocks. Really, 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 really does. And I mean, it got so bad. Like, one day, I hear, knock on the door, I open up, Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm like, hey, come on in! They're like, what? 2 hours later, they're like, can we go? I'm like, you're Jehovah's Witnesses. You're supposed to be pains in the asses. Come on, let's talk about God. You know, steps 10, 11, and 12 are just steps 1 through 9 on a daily basis. And if you come to the 9 o'clock tomorrow, I'll tell you all about it. But, you know, I still do that to this day. I still do that to this day. My life today. I retired from U.S. Airways in 2004, was it? Yeah, December 2004. I had enough time to retire. I took it. My wife and I have been very fortunate in the business world. And I'm in my third phase of my life, right? First phase was airline pilot, second phase was entrepreneur, and third phase now is a professorship that I received. And I love my students. And they're all flourishing into entrepreneurships. I teach in the engineering school. I teach an entrepreneurship business minor. Two schools have that, MIT and Stanford and UVA. And watching them grow and watching them flourish and teaching them and 12-stepping them, and they have no idea I'm 12-stepping them. There's this sober guy jumping on tables and teaching them how to start companies is the most amazing thing that you could ever, ever imagine. I tell people, you know, they're like, hey, Doug, how you doing? I was like, dude, if it gets any better, I'm going to shit a rainbow. And, you know, I mean that with all my heart. I have a wife that we just celebrated. How long, honey? Yeah, she has no idea. That's the joke. My sister calls us up, happy anniversary. I'm like, thanks. It's our anniversary. What are you doing? Oh, we're going out. We got flowers. We got chocolates. 13, honey. Glorious years. 13. I met my wife on an airplane. I just happened to be the captain. Yeah, she was going back home to Rome, Italy, and I saw her at a ticket counter. I was like, hey, check out that little guinea checking me out. And actually, she was checking out the first officer, but whatever. All right. So we pulled her up to the flight deck, and I said, hey, give me your telephone number. This airplane ain't going to go to Rome, Italy. And she's like, I turned around and walked away. I'm like, whoa, I was this. You know, first off, she's like, whoa, Captain, that worked out real good, smooth. So they started calling me X-Lax, you know, smooth X-Lax. So I never got her number. 3 years later, we're in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I own something called a private equity firm, which owns companies worldwide, and we purchase companies and make them big and sell them and start them, make them big, sell them, and fund them. And so I was funding this IT company, and I said, all right, just bring in your IT people. They were building something really cool. I think it was for a Corvette. And she had moved to America, and she's in Charlottesville, and she comes walking into my office. No kidding. And we hadn't communicated at all. And I'm looking at her, and she's looking at me, and everyone's going, wah, 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 wah. You hear me, Charlie Brown? Like, wah, 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 wah. And I wasn't getting it. And I walk in, I walk into my office, and we have like a conference room, and there's a big picture of me inside a flight deck in my uniform, turning around, kind of smiling at the camera. And she's like, she like breathes, and everyone looks at her. And she goes, "Il capitano," and I heard the Italian accent. I'm Miss Italy. And so they left, and my CFO says, well, we're not funding that one. And as soon as he said it, I'm like, oh, yes, we are. We're going to fund that. And we did, and it went out of business, just like I said. And then I got a great employee, and she's my wife, and I love her today. So those were the days when I had power. Now I don't. But, you know, I love being here. As you can tell, I love speaking about Alcoholics Anonymous. But tomorrow, if I have a mention at 9 o'clock, that's the cool stuff. That's the icing.
What's time?
It's going to be at 9 o'clock. Set me up. I love you all. Thank you. Thank you.